From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour will be made on April 19th, the date of New York State's presidential primary. By then, Donald Trump might be cruising to the Republican nomination, or the party establishment might be rallying to stop him. Or who knows? I'm done predicting. Maybe something else will happen when it comes to Trump and the rest of the field. I've been wrong about just about everything for the last 8 months or so. And yes, right now, Trump does look like the nominee. But a lot has to happen first. And this hour, we want to look at several questions. What are his chances in New York, both in April and in November, if he's the nominee? And can Donald Trump win crossover Democrats in the general election like he says he can? My guests this hour come at this question from a broad range of angles. And let me introduce them now. Arnie Rothschild's here. He's a political strategist who thinks we're going to an open convention. You still think we're going to an open convention?
I believe we're going to a brokered convention.
Brokered or, as Hugh Hewitt likes to say, there are no brokers anymore. It'd be an open convention, but we'll see. So Arnie's here to weigh in on that. Rob Shum's a professor in the Department of Political Science at the College at Brockport. Rob, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Josh Keaton is here. He's a local Democratic activist and a Clinton campaign organizer. Josh, nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And in a moment, we expect to be joined by Bill Nojay, who is an assemblyman and one of the longest-running Donald Trump supporters locally. In fact, when you look around the local Republican landscape, Bill has been urging Donald Trump to run for governor as far back as a few years ago. He's been a proud booster of Donald Trump as a presidential candidate. He's in Albany today, and we're trying to hook up a connection with Bill. We'll let you know when we do that. But there's Bill Nojay, and then there's Chris Collins, a member of Congress who represents a district that stretches from the western part of our listening area here all the way over to Buffalo. He has come out for Donald Trump. Not too many others that I know of. Arnie, maybe you know more than I do, but I don't know many others.
No, I don't either.
Is that... Why is that? I mean, you have all these behind the scenes conversations. Are people telling you I don't support him, or I support him but I'm afraid to say it publicly?
I think there were a lot of interviews that were done during the convention that kind of represented where everyone is, which is, you know, they're going to support the nominee. That said, one of the real unfortunate issues this cycle is that anyone that says they're supporting Donald Trump is immediately labeled a racist or anti-Muslim, or, you know, and so I think there's a lot of hesitancy for those people that do support him to come out and say, we do support him. That said, I think everybody, and I saw Chairman Cox in an interview say very specifically that he would support whomever the party nominee. I do believe that there's a big percentage of Republican insiders, if you will, that do believe we're headed to a brokered convention.
Okay. Well, Rob Shum, history tells us that we probably in the media overplay the power of endorsements, but I do have this interesting take on the fact that you've got Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, others who are trying to get momentum behind this Never Trump hashtag and no, anybody but Trump. But then you ask them, but are you going to support Trump if he's the nominee? And they say, well, yeah, which kind of takes some of the steam out of this whole Never Trump, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, that's one of the ironies, I suppose, of the last few days that we've seen. Of course, it's understandable if we think about it from a strategic game theoretic approach to electioneering and put ourselves in the shoes of these candidates. They want Trump's supporters, right? They're hoping that Trump gets knocked out and that they'll pick up the supporters, and that's why you see the hesitancy. But of course, the cognitive dissonance is, of course, very jarring at the moment.
And Josh Keaton, as a Clinton organizer and supporter, you know, I thought of people like you recently when I read a long New York Times story written by Maggie Haberman, among others, who kind of went inside the Clinton campaign nationally. And what they found was there are some strategists who've been kind of gleeful about this idea, thinking, well, we would destroy Donald Trump in a general. And by the way, to our audience listening today, I know that the Democratic contest is not done yet. I do not seek to denigrate Bernie Sanders in any way. I get it. Right now, we're focusing on Donald Trump for the hour. And I've got someone who's a Clinton supporter. She's the likelier nominee. I get it that it could change. But Josh, I want to ask you this. The New York Times writes this story, and there's, now, I wouldn't call it a split, but there are these competing ideas. You've got some strategists in the Clinton campaign thinking, well, this will be easy. And then you've got people all the way up to Bill Clinton himself saying, knock that off. Don't take him lightly. Everyone has been taking him lightly. Get ready for a real battle, and it will not be easy. Where do you come down on this right now?
If there's any lesson you can take away from our political cycle since July when he hopped in, since he came down that escalator and said he's going to run for president, is that you underestimate Donald Trump at your own peril. I think Bill Clinton's right. He's absolutely correct. Democrats need to be very organized. They need to start getting active. They need to get the opposition research machine going. They need to make sure that when they do get into a general elections campaign, whether it's with Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, I think it will be Hillary, but if it is Bernie Sanders, then either way, they need to make sure they have a coherent message. They need to make sure that they have all the opposition research they need to take him down, whether it's going to be with Trump University or any of his real estate dealings or any of his, really, really dramatic changes in his positions. Whatever it may be, Trump should not be underestimated at all.
All right. You still think, as a Clinton supporter, that Hillary Clinton would win in November?
I have no doubt about that.
Okay. But you're saying don't take it easy, et cetera.
Why would you? There's no reason to. He has demonstrated that he can win and that he can get people excited. And I think that if you underestimate his ability to do that, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Well, I think we've got Bill Noja on the line with us now, Assemblyman who's in Albany, who's been one of the most vocal Trump supporters. Assemblyman, are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am here. How are you? Good afternoon. How are you?
It is good afternoon, and a good afternoon to you as well. And Bill, I want to start by saying I got to tell you, I've got to be a man about it and say I've been wrong about Trump for about 9 months now, and you have been right. Now, eventually, maybe that will flip. But I thought, last summer, I questioned how serious he was. I questioned whether he could win a single state. I have been wrong about that all the way going back here. And I want to start our conversation with you on one specific point. This weekend, your favorite newspaper, the New York Times, put a story out there about Donald Trump's desire to run for president, going all the way back to his flirtations with running for governor, in which you, among a few others, were writing memos to him saying, here's why you should do it. And he clearly was more serious than a lot of us thought. He was pretty serious, wasn't he?
Well, I think he was. I wouldn't describe it as a flirtation, although that's the way a number of people in the news media have described it. He didn't approach us. We approached him.
Okay.
In 2013, a number of us in the legislature were distressed about what we saw as rampant corruption in Albany and the unwillingness of the current governor, or pretty much anybody else for that matter, to do much about the corruption. And we also saw an upstate economy that was in serious decline, and we were looking for a candidate that we thought could do something about both of those problems. And Donald Trump's name kept coming up over and over again. So we approached him. And he's a good listener. We had several meetings with him. Ultimately, obviously, he decided not to run. But we made the effort to get him to throw his hat in the ring. And, of course, part of that discussion, it became clear that he was seriously thinking about the presidency even back then. And so inevitably part of the discussion was how to transition or segue from, if he were to be the governor, whether or not that would help him or hurt him in a presidential quest, and whether or not he could use that the governor's office as a springboard, which of course many have done before him.
And so, Bill, as a Republican assemblyman who has been, I think, ahead of a lot of people on the Trump thing, whether it was in that kind of conversation about whether he'd run for governor, and now in his effort to win the White House, I want to first ask you why you have gravitated to him, not only for that governor's race, but also now on the presidential level here. Why is he the candidate that you think ought to be elected?
Well, the establishment Republicans had their chance with Bush 41 and then Bush 43, and a lot of folks think that didn't work out so well. And the feeling also was pretty widespread that Congress currently is not working out so well. On the other hand, the liberal Democrats have had 7 years of Barack Obama, and a lot of them believe, and especially their union supporters, believe that hasn't worked out so well. So I think what you're seeing is a lot of folks, both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, saying, all right, the traditional Republicanism is not something we want to return to, which is why Jeb Bush didn't ever get much traction. But the sort of the socialist, European socialist Democrat approach to things, typified by Barack Obama, that's resulted in just mountains of debt, and that really is not good for the country. So we need a third path, and Donald Trump, if nothing else, is a third path. He's not the establishment of either party. And what we're seeing in these rallies across the country, if you look at who's actually in those bleacher stands with 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 people, It is a real mix. I mean, they do know who those folks are, and they are Democrats, independents, as well as Republicans. So he seems to be drawing from a pretty diverse crowd.
Okay. I think that there's probably some debate that could be had about how diverse the crowd that Trump is drawing. Only when I look at some of the national polling numbers. But I think what Bill is saying is if you actually go to those audiences, you'll find more Democrats than maybe you think. I think the polls that I've seen show that Trump's strongest supporters are people who identify as Republicans but are actually registered as Democrats. So in a moment, I want to get to some of Donald Trump's comments himself. But I also want to ask Bill about just some of the principle of the complaints that you've authored here. And, you know, you don't need me to tell you this, Bill, that Donald Trump has been on every side of every one of those issues. I mean, this isn't like a John Kerry flip-flopped a little or Mitt Romney changed position. Every single issue that I can think of, Trump has been on multiple sides, every single one. And I could go down the list for you on health care. He says he knows it's an un-Republican thing to say, but he's going to take care of everybody, that we have to take care of everybody. That sounds a lot like single payer. But then he said it worked in Canada, can't work here. He's talked, obviously, he's flipped on abortion big time. He's flipped on Hillary Clinton herself, once in saying that she'd be a good president or a vice president. On guns, he wrote in his 2000 book that he supported a ban on assault weapons, so-called assault weapons, and that the Republicans walked the NRA line and refused even limited restrictions that would be reasonable. Even on taxes in 2004, in an interview with Wolf Blitzer, Trump said, "I've been around a long time, and it just seems the economy does better under Democrats than under Republicans." And 5 years before that, he had offered proposals to dramatically raise taxes on the wealthy. I can't see a single issue that looks like he hasn't moved based on expediency. Can you? Am I wrong?
Well, but aren't you also describing virtually every other politician out there?
I thought Trump was not supposed to be every other politician out there.
If you look at Hillary Clinton's positions, they've changed.
Yes.
She goes to Goldman Sachs and says one thing. She goes in front of a young audience in colleges.
She changed on fracking last night. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So it is, and you know, and I don't speak for Mr. Trump, and I don't speak for the campaign. I mean, I'm just a supporter, so I understand I'm not here to, I can't explain all of his positions on all the issues, because in part, I don't think that's why people are gravitating towards him. I think people are gravitating towards him precisely because he does not come out of either the Republican or the Democrat Party mainstream, and people are looking for a third path, and people will define that in different ways, depending upon their own prejudices, their own backgrounds, their own inclinations. They're just looking for somebody that is very different, and Trump certainly comes out of a different background. He has no political experience. In fact, back in 2013, when we were talking to him, and we went back to George Washington and said, look, everybody who has been president of the United States has previously held a high public position, and it would be effectively defying the political laws of gravity for you to run for the presidency and win without having any governmental background whatsoever. You know what? That's what people like about him. So he is defying the political laws of physics by doing in this race, at least so far. I mean, he hasn't been elected yet, but so far that is what seems to attract people to him.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree that it's hard for me to kind of get my head around some of that, because what Bill is saying, what Assemblyman Nojay is saying, is people got tired of the basic same old political stuff. I understand it, but I also see someone who, you know, Bill, your party has been trying to claim this family values mantle for many years. Do you have to give that up if he's the nominee?
Well, if you look at the people that are supporting Trump, I don't think, you know, the old Reagan three-legged stool of traditional values, fiscal conservatives, and foreign policy hawks, that is no longer the Republican base. If you look at the Republican Party now, it's a much more libertarian. We look at this, the success of Rand Paul, both of the Pauls, over the last couple of cycles. Look at the success of the people that are talking about individual liberties prevailing over the power of government. That really is the theme that's resonating. That's a libertarian theme. Now, when I was growing up, libertarian was Lyndon LaRouche and a bunch of crazy people talking about conspiracy theories. But libertarianism now is, I think, becoming much more mainstream, especially amongst young people, the under 35 crowd. They are much more fiscally conservative, which is why I think they're very concerned about the levels of national debt. that have been rung up, especially in the last 6 or 8 years. But they're also socially much more libertarian. You know, as long as you don't hurt anybody, government shouldn't be telling you what to do. And that seems to be a common thread behind a lot of Donald Trump's thinking. Plus, he adds being the private businessman who has created a lot of jobs, who's been very successful. And they see hope in that, especially in places like upstate New York. I think it's going to resonate because the economy here is really in a tailspin. I mean, we all know the adjusted U6 unemployment rate throughout pretty much all of upstate New York is probably around 20%, maybe even higher in some rural counties. So the economy is a shambles in upstate New York. All the promises that have been made, Hillary Clinton said she was going to create 200,000 jobs when she was running for Senate in 2000. Well, that didn't happen. So, okay, again, even a lot of the traditional Democrats that might ordinarily go for somebody like a Hillary Clinton are thinking, well, she's had her chance. That hasn't worked out so well. We need to try a plan B, and there's Donald Trump.
Arnie Rothschild, you want to weigh in there?
I think that anyone that believes that elections in 2016 are driven by the understanding of voters and policy do that at their own peril. I think as I said the last time we were together, that I think that in 2008, on the day after the presidential election, if anybody could tell you what President Obama believed in from a policy point of view, I would be surprised. That is not what drives elections today. Elections are driven by relatability. Sometimes likability. And I don't believe that anybody is looking at Donald Trump flip-flops. I think that they're looking at Donald Trump saying the things that Howard Stern says that shock people, that may be bouncing around in their heads saying, you know, I was thinking that, but I was afraid to say it. And by the way, one of the comments of earlier, there's an old adage in politics, which is Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. What you're seeing in the hedge of a lot of the Republican power structure, if you will, is just living to that belief. They're going to fall in line. And do all the Trump voters fall with them? That's another question.
Well, and it's the opposite in this cycle here. Right. You could say if Democrats are falling in love, they'd be more likely to fall in love with Sanders, but they're more likely to fall in line with Clinton. Whereas on the Republican side, there's a lot of voters who are apparently falling in love with Trump and who don't want to fall in line.
But I think
with whoever the establishment tells them to.
Respectfully, I think that underscores the growth of Sanders. You know, what's ended up happening is a lot of people have fallen in love with him, even though they don't believe that he's necessarily electable. You know, but I think, you know, back to the point, I don't think that Trump is measured by policy parameters. I think Trump is measured by the emotion of policy statements.
Josh, agree?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that if you look at the way that our politics have worked since President Obama was elected, you know, you had 2 years where Democrats had control of the House and the Senate and the presidency. Lots of things happened. There was a backlash to those policy choices. And starting in 2010, nothing has really happened at the federal level. And so where I think a lot of this is coming from is that you've got folks who are hearing government not working. They're also seeing government not working. I mean, just to pass a budget, which should be the most pro forma thing to do in government, is now moving heaven and earth. So in a very real sense, government has failed. But where I think the challenge lies for Republicans is to explain to voters in a general election that it's failed because of Democratic policies and because of the liberal agenda. Because I think that Democrats have a big opening to say, listen, guys, you've now had the House and the Senate now for 2 years. You've had the House for 6 years. There's a reason why things aren't working out. It remains to be seen whether that message will work or not, but I think it's going to be a very compelling message come November.
All right, well, let's turn to what Donald Trump himself has said on a number of these issues that sparked this conversation. Donald Trump, first of all, had an interesting interview. When he talked to Jake Tapper on CNN recently, a lot of people keyed in on the David Duke stuff, and I get it. But there were some other interesting things that came out of that were sort of overshadowed. So first, I want to listen to what Donald Trump says about bringing over Democrats in the general election. This is Donald Trump talking to CNN.
As a candidate, I will bring over many, many Dems. We're going to bring over a lot of Democrats. We're going to bring over a lot of independents. Nobody else will. In all fairness, the other candidates, they will never bring over independents. They will never bring it. We're talking about the Reagan Democrats. We're going to bring over tremendous numbers. We're going to bring over youth.
All right, Josh Keaton, the Democrat in the room here who's organizing for Hillary Clinton. Again, you said earlier you take it seriously that that could happen if you're not careful. But what would it take for that to happen? What do you think to make for Donald Trump to be right about that?
For Democrats to not organize. I mean, I think that as long as Democrats do their job, the Clinton campaign does their job, the DNC does their job, drives up Democratic voters, then there's no reason that's going to happen. When you actually, I mean, this is the problem with listening to Donald Trump's statements, is that they're so disconnected from reality in a lot of cases. When you actually look at polling data and you look at favorability numbers, I don't see where his path is in a general election. You've got a net favorability of minus 64 with Latino voters.
That is true.
It is incredible how bad he does. When you look at independent
voters. That's a Washington
voters,
Post poll, yeah. Yes.
The Gallup, I want to say about a month ago, did a favorability rating among independents. He was minus 27.
But Josh, he is strongest, and in some polls that I've seen, he is strongest among voters who say they are Republicans but are registered as Democrats. I guess these are the Reagan Democrats, the possible crossovers. And he does pretty strongly with them right now in the field. Could that not continue?
Well, I don't think those voters voted for President Obama in 2012 either. So I don't anticipate that really being a huge problem. And if you look at states where you would anticipate in a general election for the Trump coalition to be most successful, it's Rust Belt states. I think we can all agree that's where the sort of the white working class.
The Michigans of the world.
The Michigans
Ohio.
Of the world, right. I'm glad you brought up Michigan, Evan, because where I was going with this was there was a poll that came out just over the weekend that said that Hillary Clinton was up 17 points early. Now, I don't want to fall too much in the Donald Trump trap of having poll numbers be my entire talking point, but 17 points is a huge number. And so I think the idea that this all translates into the general election is very, very tough to argue. What I will say, though, is that despite that being the case, Bill Clinton is still correct. And folks in the DNC who are worried about Donald Trump are still correct. You can't just simply say, listen, we're up by 20 points. It's March. We're fine. No, they have to make sure they're working, but I don't see it happening.
All right, let's get the whole panel's take on that. Rob Shum, professor in the Department of Political Science at the College of Brockport. Donald Trump says he will win those crossover voters and no one else in this field can. Historically, what can we learn? And do we start throwing out history lessons with Donald Trump? I mean, he's really defying so much of what we've understood.
Yeah, I think that might be a good starting approach. We have to rethink a lot of our assumptions, I think, about how the American political system works. And one thing I think that it really shows is that it's misleading. I mean, it's convenient for us to think of a single left-right political spectrum, but we're not living in a single-dimensional policy issue space. And so you get this phenomenon where maybe he's representing an extreme centrism, right? Where you have this combination of, I agree with what Arnie was saying in terms of, policy not necessarily playing a large role in this cycle, but you have this strange, agglomeration of anti-globalization and trade protectionist policies along with support for torture, war crimes, and mass deportation. And that's still, if you try to map it onto a single dimension, that's centrist. And there's arguably Democratic voters that might be appeal that find that message appealing.
Well, easy, Rob. It was at the last debate that Trump said that he would order waterboarding and worse, and that the next day he walked it back. He didn't wait to walk that one back. But again, as Arnie's been telling us, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. Arnie, go ahead.
I call this the ultimate Lee Atwater moment in time. It is about to be an election, regardless. First of all, you have two people with the highest number of votes in their respective parties who have the highest negatives of the candidates. But this is one of those elections, as Lee Atwater used to say, that you probably are going to decide who to vote against as opposed to who to vote for. This is an election, in my view, that is totally different than anything that we've seen, whether it's Donald Trump as the candidate or not. It's interesting. I got frustrated over the weekend and watching the reporting of delegate counts and hearing a lot of the networks that I would consider take a liberal slant talking about Republican insiders trying to change the nature of the nominating process. At the same time that Democrats use a superdelegate premise, which is the ultimate insiders. Now, I went to high school with a very bright lady named Camille Paglia, who wrote a really insightful article in Salon, last week in terms of the dynamic of this election, as she has. there is nothing, I think, that we can measure from the past that will give us a roadmap until we get past the Republican convention. And maybe it gets a little more illuminated after Ohio and Florida in terms of what happens on the Republican side, or murkier. I just think that we're in a very unusual moment in time. I do believe we're headed to a brokered convention, whether there are brokers or not. We'll call it a dealmaker convention. And interestingly, I think this is going to be an election about who you vote against, not who you vote for.
Well, and Arnie can call it the Lee Atwater rule. I'll pick a different generational person. How about comedian Jay Moore? Jay Moore said, "Who you marry..." Everybody thinks we got to like the same things. You don't have to like the same things. You're not going to go out to the same movie as your wife. You have to hate the same things as a person that you're,
I like that,
you're with, because those are what things that unify people. Those are things that motivate you. And right now, there is a lot of hatred for Hillary Clinton out there that will motivate people. So Bill Nojay, first of all, then let's hit this two ways with you, Assemblyman. First of all, for the Republicans out there saying, and I've heard from some on this program, if Trump is the nominee, he's the one guy I won't get behind when it comes to Hillary Clinton. My guess is you'll say, no way, they will line up. And number two, what about winning over those sort of centrist Democrats? Take it however you want there, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, as long as they're quoting everybody, George Will, I think, had the best quote I've ever heard on how you vote for president, which is, you pull the lever, or in this case now, fill in the little circle, for the candidate that you want to see in your living room every night for the next 4 years. And it, there is a certain truth to that. If you go back to recent cycles, it's the candidate that average Americans would feel most comfortable sitting in the Oval Office talking to them or watching them do things and whatnot. And I don't think, as between, and going to the point that Arnie Rothschild made a moment ago, as between a Donald Trump and a Hillary Clinton, I don't think most Americans really have thought that through yet. The reality of having that as a choice before them in November, certainly both of them have very, very high name ID. Everybody's got opinions. But actually seeing those two names on the ballot, I don't think most Americans have actually sat down and thought through, where am I going to go with this one? So I think this is, always remember, a lot of these races historically have been decided just in the last couple of weeks. Ronald Reagan was down by 8 points against Jimmy Carter in 1980, 10 days before Election Day, and made those 8 points up and then won sweepingly in the last 2 weeks of the campaign. Anything can happen in this cycle. As was stated a moment ago, this is really like nothing we've ever seen before. And there's another old saying, which is that elections are not referendums, they're choices. So until those choices are resolved at the conventions this summer, I don't think people are really going to start focusing seriously. It's a lot of entertainment between now and then, but let's reconvene the conversation in August to see what Americans are really going to be thinking about.
All right, the next two prongs on this question, as we consider Donald Trump and his candidacy, can he win New York? He's almost certainly going to win it in April based on the polls and the way things are going now. Could he win it in November? And can he win non-white vote? He addressed both of those recently on CNN. We're going to get a very short break and come back. You'll hear what Donald Trump had to say, our panel, and we'll get some of your phone calls and questions as well with our guests, Arnie Rothschild, a political strategist, Rob Shum, professor in the Department of Political Science at the College of Brockport. Josh Keaton is a local Democratic activist and a Clinton campaign organizer, and Assemblyman Bill Nojay is on the line with us from Albany, generous with his time for us this hour as he's working and he's on the line talking about his longtime support of Donald Trump and his analysis of the race. Short break and more next. Coming up in our second hour, it's our monthly science roundtable. One of the coolest science stories I've ever heard. Gravitational waves, their discovery. How did we detect a gravitational wave coming from the merging of two black holes more than a billion light years away? And what are the connections at RIT and Hobart and William Smith Colleges? We unravel the mystery and explain gravitational waves next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Sweden has taken in more migrants per capita than any other European country, and tens of thousands of these are unaccompanied minors.
They want to start school immediately. They want to work. They want to do something.
We meet the people helping to settle kids into their new lives. That story and the news out of an emergency EU summit with Turkey later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Can Donald Trump win New York? Well, our primary is April 19th, and it's starting to look like that state may matter on maybe on both sides, interestingly enough, for the first time in about four decades. And we'll see. He's winning big time in the recent polls. In fact, I think I had them in front of me here somewhere in this stack of stuff. Here it is, the newest Siena College poll. Donald Trump leading the GOP field easily right now. 27-point lead over both Kasich and Rubio. Ted Cruz even further behind. Trump getting crushed in the general election in New York right now, losing to both Clinton and Sanders 57-34. Statewide, Donald Trump viewed unfavorably by 67% of New Yorkers. That is a big number to overcome. But here's what Donald Trump told CNN about his chances of winning this state.
I will win places like Michigan that people don't even talk about. I will have a chance of winning New York. If I win New York, the election's over, okay, from an electoral college standpoint. I have a chance of winning New York. I'll win states that aren't in play. I'll win states that the Republicans don't even think of. And one of them that comes to mind is Michigan, and another one is New York. Upstate New York, I'm like the most popular person that's ever lived virtually upstate New York. They're great friends of mine, and we will do very well in New York. I don't know, maybe win it, maybe not, but we're going to come awfully close to winning it. I think I have a great chance.
Okay, that's Donald Trump talking to CNN. I only laugh just because I'm not making fun of him saying he's the most popular person who's ever lived up here. It's just that's such a classic Trump flourish. But maybe he is. And we're going to find out, we'll get a little closer to finding out next month. Now, I see the phone ringing. We're going to get your phone calls between now and the rest of the hour. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I think we all agree he's right on one thing. If he wins New York in the general, you can shut it down. He's winning the election. Even Josh Keaton, the Clinton supporter, yes, Josh. If he wins New York in the general, it's over. Yes.
In that universe, yes, it's over.
In that universe, it is way over. Bill Nojay, is he as popular as he's saying upstate?
He's certainly very popular because he's appealing to people living in an economy that's in deep trouble. Upstate unemployment rate is very, very high, probably around 20% most of our rural counties. Cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and our smaller cities like Elmira, and Cornell, and the Southern Tier, and Binghamton, are all in terrible trouble. They've got huge infrastructure challenges, huge unemployment problems. The WARN notices, which are the, you know, we're shutting down the factory type notices, roll in almost every week. Continuing in upstate New York, we've lost a million population. People feel this, and they see the unemployment numbers of, you know, that the official government numbers of 5%, and they know those numbers are wrong. So then a Donald Trump comes along, a guy who has built businesses and created thousands of jobs, and they think, okay, here's somebody who's different from all these other politicians. And if it is Trump versus Hillary, always remember that Hillary is the person who promised in 2000 that she would create 200,000 jobs in upstate New York. Well, it didn't happen, not even close. So if you now have a choice between her and Donald Trump, somebody who actually has created thousands of jobs in his career, I think he's got a pretty good appeal in upstate New York. And Long Island and New York City, I think he's also, if you take a look at a lot of the polling numbers, he does better in New York City than he does in upstate. So if he wins upstate, he'll have New York City, and that's the election.
All right, Trudy, John, others on the phone, we're coming to you in just a second. But first, Arnie Rothschild, as a strategist, how do you start to turn around 67% unfavorable? That's a hard number to turn in a general, isn't it?
Well, I want to go back to the Siena polls for a second because I once did a district attorney's race. They had us up 11. We lost by 9.
And you're going to do the Lovely Warren too, aren't you?
And I did the Lovely Warren. Lovely Warren race.
Those are harder to pull when you have that small of a turnout.
Now, all that said, from what I've been hearing from operatives in this part of the state, Donald Trump polling is the second densest in the United States in what we find as upstate New York. That, and I'm also hearing some congressional polling numbers from a western district where Senator Clinton, Secretary Clinton, is upside down 23. So I think, to Bill's point, this is a distressed part of the state. I think that kind of plays to the Trump message. And while, you know, whether we like this or not, and it'll be about choices, do I believe the polling is articulated? I'm afraid I don't.
Okay. Well, before we get to that question on numbers that are upside down, Josh Keaton had mentioned -64 among Latinos, which is going to be important. But let me grab a phone call. Trudy's been waiting to weigh in from Pittsford. Go ahead, Trudy.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I think Donald Trump might be a friend of Silvio Berlusconi in Italy. He also was the second richest man in Italy, and he was not liked. And I compare him with Donald Trump. Now, I'm from Germany. I get calls every weekend from my family. They say, how can the public in the U.S. go for Donald Trump? The public in the U.S. is not educated. Bernie Sanders is right. We need free education. So the mass of the people in this country should be educated so they would know what Donald Trump is about. You know, foreign dignitaries, foreign presidents have voiced now their concern about Donald Trump, different countries. And the parliament, the English parliament, voted against Donald Trump. He is banned from England. And England is...
He's not banned from England. They talked about doing it. I think they thought better of it.
Well, I talked to someone from Cambridge, and he said they really had a debate about him.
They did, but they did not vote,
you know,
banned about
him. How can you bring this person to other countries with his mannerism? It's impossible. So, you know, the question is, we need educated people. Bernie Sanders is right. So they would know what Donald Trump is about. And Berlusconi was in the similar situation in Italy.
All right. Trudy, let me jump in and let me kick that over to Assemblyman Bill Nojay. Bill, she's comparing Trump to Berlusconi. Berlusconi, obviously a longtime Italian leader, had his own foibles, and I think that's putting it lightly. I think she's saying that because there is an authoritarian streak to some of Trump's behavior in this campaign. And here is a series of tweets from someone in your district, in your assembly district. Caleb writes to us and says, what does the Assemblyman Nojay make of the fact that Trump seems to be the preferred candidate of white power groups, that the candidate himself has called for blocking Muslim entry into the United States? Curious to know what you think about that. Go ahead, Bill.
Right. The caller that said that she spoke to somebody in Cambridge. I mean, that's like asking somebody in Harvard Yard, at the Harvard Faculty Club, what they think of conservatives or Republicans. I'm not sure that's the best sample, or the Upper West Side of Manhattan, who I always remember that one quote when was it Reagan that won an election, and somebody said from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, I don't know how he won. Nobody that I know voted for him. Well, no, you've got to always look at your sample size. And that also goes to Arnie Rothschild's point about the Siena poll. I mean, the Siena poll had Tom Richards beating Lovely Warren by 23 points a week before the election. And they were off by 33 percentage points in that one. So polling is imperfect. And especially nowadays, with everybody having cell phones and urban communities especially not having any landlines, which is what the polling outfits are usually on. They got to have pretty accurate algorithms to be able to do the adjustments, and they haven't really been able to do that. So the polling data has not really been that reliable. And in terms of where the support is, I'll go back to, first of all, the people in Germany have got their own problems right now with refugees. I was talking over the weekend with a friend from Sweden who has said that politics in Europe is being turned completely upside down by the refugee situation, especially in countries like Sweden, where they're starting to realize that a lot of the policies, the open door or open border policies, are producing disastrous results for the government there. So that's a whole set of issues that are really separate, and which Trump has addressed by saying, "Look, let's be deliberate about what we're doing until we really understand who's coming over and how to properly screen them and so on." I think Trump's support is going to be based not upon those issues or what Europeans think. Trump's support is going to be based upon the average American voter that is worried about whether they have a job, whether they can get a job, the young people coming out of colleges that cannot find jobs today and yet face six figures of college debt. And are panicking because of that.
But Bill, why do you think, why is he playing footsie with white power groups?
I don't think he is. I think that's a media narrative that a lot of people in the news media have been promoting in the same way that they promoted it with virtually every conservative candidate of the last 40 years. But it's simply not true. He has disavowed any relationship with those groups. He has done it multiple times on multiple media channels. And yet it keeps coming up because that is a narrative that the liberal media likes to push about any conservative candidate. But it's simply not accurate.
All right, Josh Keaton, who is a Clinton supporter, you kind of rolled your eyes a little at that. I want you to weigh in there. Do you think Trump has been playing footsie? Is this, have we created this narrative in the media, Josh?
No, absolutely not. This has been the modus operandi of the Trump campaign from day one. Again, this is the guy that was still, as of 2012, saying President Obama was born in Kenya, that we can't believe where his birth certificate came from. You know, it's not a coincidence that a media figure and a popular figure like him, who has made his beliefs in the public realm around the idea of the first African-American president isn't really a citizen, that we have to build a wall, that Mexicans are rapists and murderers and killers, and we have to get rid of them, that we have to enable the government to get rid of 11 million people in the United States, and that we have to have religious tests for determining who enters this country, it shouldn't be surprising then that you have white nationalists doing robocalls in over a dozen states for Donald Trump, that in rally after rally after rally, just last week in Georgia prior to Super Tuesday, or a couple weeks ago, I should say, in Valdosta State, you had over two dozen African-American students who came, were not disrupting the rally at all, and they were summarily thrown out by the Trump campaign. Just standing there, they were all thrown out. You see video after video after video of minorities being thrown out, violently being thrown out, being kicked, stomped, pushed. This doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I think, as Arnie can attest, as someone who's worked on a lot of campaigns, this doesn't happen in political campaigns either. You don't see that kind of pushing, shoving, that kind of anger being expressed in that way. And it comes right from the pulpit. Just a week ago, you had Donald Trump saying that he wishes he could punch someone that was being thrown out of one of his rallies.
All right. Now, Bill, see, what Josh is laying out there, if all of that, what Josh had just laid out, wasn't the underlying circumstances, then maybe when Trump is talking to CNN and says, yeah, I don't know anything about David Duke and white supremacist groups. I can't. What do you want me to say? I don't know these people. Then it might look like, well, maybe he just had a moment of forgetfulness. Because we know that about 15 years ago, he did disavow David Duke, and he did disavow the KKK 15 years ago. But on top of what Josh is saying, when he then comes out and says, not David Duke, I don't know, the concern is it starts to feel like a little bit of a dog whistle, a wink and a nod, and then the next day you go, well, of course I disavow. You know, so I guess what I'm saying, Bill, is I don't want to be part of a media that's trumpeting unfair narratives on any side, but I do think I understand why people are looking at this and they're not comfortable. Do you at least understand that, Bill?
Look, if you're Hillary Clinton and you have clearly committed multiple felonies by having over 1,000 top secret emails on a private home server for everybody to read, of course you want to change the narrative. You want to change the narrative if you're talking to an audience in New York State that you promised 200,000 jobs that you never delivered a single job on. Of course you want to change the narrative. The liberal media and their favorite candidates are always going to try to change the narrative away from people that are talking about creating jobs, reducing the debt, not being, no matter what the issue, talk about foreign policy. Hillary Clinton isolated Israel more than any other Secretary of State as part of an administration that has alienated Israel, our lone ally in the Middle East, in a way that no other president has done, Secretary of State has done in modern American history. So of course they want to change the narrative. They will change the narrative to make it about anything other than their own record. If Hillary Clinton wants to talk about why she has committed multiple felonies, why she is known as probably the most corrupt Secretary of State in modern times, then we'd be glad to have that conversation. But let's not create false narratives just to change the subject.
All right, I don't mean to dodge on the Hillary Clinton thing. Josh is going to have an aneurysm if this keeps up. But listen, I would say to Bill, the media is largely liberal. The New York Times has a liberal editorial page, for sure. And they also ran a two-part front-page story taking apart Hillary Clinton's role in Libya that was no favor to the secretary. So, and they were also the ones who uncovered Moreland. you know, no favor to the governor. So I understand Bill's point on a liberal media, but I don't necessarily think that this media is not willing to take shots where they find it. Before I jump over to the phones real quickly here, Rob Shum, historically, again, I don't know, maybe we should throw out history, but minus 64 in Latinos, and Donald Trump says he's going to win the African-American vote because the African-American community is really struggling in this country. So he says between now and Election Day, even though he's underwater in terms of favorability among non-whites, he will turn it around. Now, CNN pointed out to him, if he wins the same amount of whites that Mitt Romney won, which is 59%, he would have to win 30% of the non-white vote. He says he can do it. What should we expect from history on that?
It seems definitely to be an uphill battle that again, he'd be required to get something like 70% of white voters, and that's difficult to imagine happening, really.
Okay. Ernie, if you're on, you know, you're not working for Donald Trump, you got plenty of other things going on, but how do you start to turn those numbers around?
Well, it's interesting. My daughter-in-law is Mexican-American, and my son works for the Phoenix Police Department, as does my daughter-in-law. And if you were to conduct polling in the Phoenix area of Mexican citizens, they strongly are conservative Republican. And so, you know, I think when we use this broad brush of Latino voters, and I'm not really sure that there is a broad brush. I think that, you know, geographically they change. I don't know where the sample comes from. I do know from my own life experiences that in the Phoenix, Arizona area, huge pockets of extremely religious, conservative, Republican, Mexican citizens. So so that said, again, I am very suspect of any polling that's being done this cycle. Bill kind of walked up to the line. We don't have wired phones anymore. We have cell phones. People are not inclined to respond. We have extremely weighted sample sizes.
I think those are fair, but he's still got to turn it around somewhat with Latinos, right?
And depending on how the ticket aligns, or you know, or where the support comes from, without question, he has to. He's been extremely aggressive. But I would come back to something. Yeah, he wants to build a wall between Mexico and the United States, and yet if you were to go to the Phoenix, Arizona area and poll Mexican citizens in the United States, they would be strongly in support of him.
Here's Margaret in Rochester calling in off air to say that the election is going to be about socialism versus capitalism, which is why Trump will do well here. Josh, quick comment there, and then I'm going to grab one more quick phone call. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, just to follow up on what Arnie said, I think that you and the assemblyman are correct. I mean, it's difficult to get a good gauge on polling and how do we appropriately sample size things. There is a poll done every 4 years, though, and that happens every 4 years. And we know that in 2012 that Latino voters went 2-for-3 for President Obama. So if we use that as our baseline, I think it's hard to imagine how a candidate who is coming out with these sorts of policies could turn that around so dramatically. I mean, capitalism versus socialism, I prefer to say no comment on that, really, because I don't view that as a paradigm through which voters will look at this election at all, particularly if Hillary Clinton is the candidate.
Yeah, I mean, if Bernie Sanders is the nominee, you will see that tagline a lot more.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I prefer to have Hillary go into the general election. I think she'd be stronger.
All right, Dan in Springwater, got to make it 30 seconds or less. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, Evan?
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make two points. Bill Joe Noljay made the comment, two different comments that I disagree with or have find a problem with. One being that upstate New York, western New York, is unemployed more. And I just wanted to remind him that this is his territory, Reed's territory, Chris Collins' territory, Kathy Young's. And the second I wanted to make is Israel being our ally. I know we try to stabilize the Middle East, but ask Bill if he remembers that Israel, our ally, blew one of our Navy ships. I'm a Navy veteran. It blew one of our ships out of the ocean back in the late 50s because they said we were spying on them. So I'll leave it at that, Evan. I'm not a fan of Bill Noljay.
Okay, well, Dan, listen. Thanks for the phone call. And Assemblyman Noljay, we could do a whole other hour on American policy with Israel. We're gonna leave that aside because that is a whole other discussion. But, Bill, I want to give you some of the last words here. We're down to about our last 30 seconds here. I'll say it again. Bill Nogue has been right a lot more than I have when it comes to Donald Trump. What do you expect to happen between now and November, Bill?
Look, this is, as we said earlier, this is a cycle like we haven't seen in anybody's memory. I started watching politics when I was a middle school kid at 22 school on Zimbrick Street off of Joseph Avenue in 1968. So there I've dated myself. We used to go downtown Rochester and get Humphrey buttons and wear them on the one side of our jackets, and Nixon buttons wear them on the other side.
Not George Wallace?
There has not been a cycle like this in anybody's memory. Voters are going to decide. I think it's going to come right down to the end in the fall, and how they go, and even who the nominees are. It's going to be a wild season.
Bill, I know you're working in Albany. Thanks for making it work for us this hour, and we'll talk to you again. Assemblyman Bill Nogue joining us. Arnie, open convention, you say, yes?
I do.
Thank you for your time here. Josh, who is it going to be on the Republican side? Is it going to be Trump?
Odds on favorite, yes, but boy, it's hard to say. I think Arnie's right.
Why do we even predict anymore? I mean, Rob, I'm going to make you predict. Go ahead. Who's it going
to
be?
I'm going to predict that Democratic turnout is actually going to skyrocket if Trump gets nominated.
I agree with that.
Crazy.
Absolutely.
Listen, we have a lot more conversations on related subjects to come. Thanks to our panel. Thanks for your comments and calls. We'll be right back with more Connections.